welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Whatever show. Sometimes we call it energy. Sometimes we don't know what to call it, but here we are again. Tonight we're going to have some fun. I've been working on my book, and a bunch of coincidences occurred this week, last week, a lot of them this week, that are too numerous to overlook. And one of the big things that's of concern right now is your heads. Yeah, your head out there. You have a head, that thing on top of your shoulders if you have one. And next week's guest is going to be Dr. Colin Ross. He's got about 15 best-selling books out there, including one slamming the CIA for the loss of American freedoms and the misappropriation of humans over the last 50 years by the CIA. Dr. Ross is a degreed medical doctor in the field of psychology, medicine, and he works at three major hospitals around the country. He's very high profile. So this show is dedicated to getting ready for him on top of some stuff I'm doing on my book and the appropriate things that have been going on. And as you know, I'm going to put some things together tonight for you that haven't been heretofore clarified. The last time we did a show like this was during Hurricane Katrina, when we did a talk about the use of HAARP technologies to actually alter the force and the direction of a hurricane, which was a result of a solar flare, CH-182. Okay, here's where we're going to start. Okay, the tonight's show is electronic harassment. So we're going to start with the facts of what's going on last week and the week before. And I'm sure you know what happened on February 15th, 2008 at Northern Illinois University with a young guy by the name of Stephen Kazmierczak. He stopped taking his medication and decided to go out and shoot people with a pump-action Remington shotgun and a Glock 9mm handgun, which were purchased legally just a few days before on February 9th in Champaign, Illinois, where he was involved in the university. Now, everybody was in great shock about this very excellent student who was on Paxil. And we're going to be talking about Paxil in a little bit, but we're going to lead up to this. Okay? So this is fact number one. Now, schoolyard shootings. Have we had any at all lately? Well, I think we've had just a real quick synopsis of schoolyard shootings. And you know, I've been out there. A lot of you know I've been out. I was out there with Al Gore at Columbine and Janet Reno. We were all there interviewing and hanging out at Columbine, learning about it. I've had Columbine kids on my show, survivors that have been shot. But let's just quickly, May 20th, 99, T.J. Solomon, a 15-year-old, wounds six at Heritage High School in Conyers, Georgia. T.J. was on Ritalin. April 16, 1999, Sean Cooper, 15-year-old sophomore, wounds one, Notice Junior High School at Notice, Idaho. He was abused and medicated. April 20, 1999, Eric Harrison, Dylan Klebo. Well, we know about that one, and that, of course, was Effexor and Luvox. Kip Kinkle, 1998, 15-year-old, kills and wounds four. Wounds 23 at Thurston High School, Springfield. He was on Prozac. March 24th, 1998, Mitchell Johnson down in Andrew Golden, down in Arkansas. It was a famous case. I got a little bit involved with open fire on classmates. They were on drugs. Matter of fact, Mitchell had been actually indicted for statutory rape earlier in Wisconsin, but that's another another story. John Rappert, Arlington, okay, I'm just going to go on down. Ben Garris, 16-year-old in Baltimore, stabbed his counselor to death. Christina Fetters, 14-year-old from Des Moines, Iowa, stabbed her favorite aunt in a rage that landed her a life sentence. Later on, the manufacturer of Zoloft sued by a Kansas family for the suicide of their 14-year-old, and it just goes on and on and on. So I think you get the picture without me getting too statistical about where we're going with this part of it. Okay, now that's just the beginning of it. There's a lot more. Secondly, when we talk about this stuff, You know, we talked about the ingredients. There's a lot of new listeners out there tonight that I know for a fact are listening. So now let's go back and look at the next thing that happened. The next thing that happened is we've got a satellite up there. Okay, last week, it's a 5,000-pound satellite with hydrazine in it. A lot of concern about shooting that satellite down. Now, why wasn't there concern about that satellite earlier? And what was on board that satellite that might have come down intact? Would it have possibly been extraterrestrial technology? We'll talk about that and the possibility of it, and we'll get factual. Okay? Thirdly, mind control, Manchurian candidate stuff. Okay? So these are the three topics that we're going to try to attempt to blend together. Okay? We're going to actually start with this. Now, in the very beginning, as you know, back in the 50s, I was working at the University of Michigan. Now, this has nothing to do with my Dr. Katz work. I worked at the Randolph Laboratory with Steven Eberbaum. We were doing some other work back there that we haven't talked about too much on this network, and that is that we had built a neuronic stimulator back in the 50s, and we were able to stimulate the human brain, which in case we stimulated our own sometimes, maybe I didn't recover. We were able to cause arms to move, different limbs to move. We were able to go into a forced form of hypnosis and go into altered states, all this by stimulation of the occipital parietal lobes. This is what began to happen. Now, before I go into that, I want to define something else. This is called electronic harassment. Number one, these are forms of electronic harassment, okay? I'm giving you a lot of food to think about tonight. Surveillance is the imposed observations of one's belongings, person, or surroundings through the use of listening devices, video recording, transmitting devices, spectral imaging through heat, sound, and other radiation sources, and other means of observing one's actions, possessions, or routines. Note that all forms of surveillance utilize electronic devices, and not all forms of surveillance are illegal or considered harassment. Simple observation using one's eyes is also considered surveillance. Surveillance is becoming more and more advanced as our society progresses in technology. Many devices such as microcorders, microtransmitters, and microtransceivers and lasers bounce listeners are ready to and available to spy novelty shops and online stores. Now, some of this, yes, I'm reading because this is part of my book. So some of this you're going to find in my Inside Track book. And this happens, coincidentally, there isn't any, I'd call it entanglement prize. This is all coming together. This chapter is tonight. Electronic sabotage or interference is exactly that. Any sabotage or intentionally configuring personal property to either to be destroyed or malfunction is considered electronic harassment. Any type of intentional interference, such as electronic noise generators, sound generators, light generators, spark and gap disruptors, or any other form of EMI, we've talked about that, electromagnetic interference, which either destroys, causes, or malfunction or loss of resources is considered electronic harassment. Directed harmful high energy is another form. This is the most dangerous form of electronic harassment and is the easiest to implement in use. Directed harmful high-energy weapons can include a vast array of devices and equipment available in almost every major city in the world. These devices can include modified microwave oven designed to culminate up to 1,200 kilowatts of microwave energy at a person or property. The results of such an attack can kill or disable a human being. Attack from weapons of this nature will leave blisters, internal bruising, and/or bleeding, cancer, cataracts, tumors, boils, red patches on the exterior. Weapons of this nature have ranges from point of contact to several hundred yards, and as we'll find out later, they're now available to deliver in energy, and I even have the patent numbers from space and the companies that build them. Devices like this can destroy electronic devices, cause severe interference with computers, and alarm. I know for a fact that BBS Radio, we got hit with some of this stuff, and it wiped out some of our computers, and there was no plausible explanation when Donna, I think, lost two or three computers in one afternoon. Device like this can destroy and cause severe interference and alarm systems for forced entry or data destruction. Radar guns are available from surplus stores worldwide and can be obtained from ex-military sources. Radar guns are capable of outputs ranging from a couple of watts to 3 megawatts. Portable radar guns can range from handheld sizes to vehicle-mounted. These devices have very long ranges due to high frequencies and shorter wavelengths, which makes for an easier collimation of the beam. Radar guns can emit long or short pulses of energy capable of instant death to living creatures, semiconductor destruction or malfunction, brain damage, and stopping vehicles. And, of course, I'm sure you've heard about the new devices that the police are starting to use. Now, these forms of electronic harassment can make an individual think they're losing their mind or what they have a mental illness. BDI induction can be imposed using three methods. Microwave carrier, ULF, UHF induction method. This method uses a microwave signal modulated with either audio or video and another form of data or signal. It then transmits the microwave energy with a BDI carrier signal to the target. Each person reaction can be different, slightly different, which makes it hard to diagnose as such. This form of harassment causes voices, random images, and other such phenomena to occur. This was developed over 10 years ago for communication research between humans and dolphins. A similar device is known as the wireless neurophone. There are many patents for similar devices. This device can be placed on targets home and remotely operated. Then there's another type, direct contact induction method. This method requires direct contact with the skin of the target. BDI is induced by means of skin acting as a capacitive variable in the form of a harmonic resonator circuit. The DCI method uses a high voltage DC carrier modulated with a BDI signal, and this is coupled to the target. This signal is interpreted by the nerves below the surface skin. This is the stuff that we were doing as a kid, and the brain recognizes these signals and then processes them, and thus images of the sound and data appear of the target without the use of their eyes, ears, or visual observation. A similar device is also known as a neurophone. Magnetic pulse induction. The neurons within the nerves and brain of the human body are very sensitive to magnetic fields. The MPI method uses an induction coil to induce a low to medium flux density in and around the brain, thus causing neurons to misroute, slow down, and revert. This form of electronic BDI harassment is often diagnosed as EMI, electromagnetic interference sensitivity. This is similar to an individual getting headaches from extended usage of their cell phone or nausea from being around power lines for extended periods of time. This method can be a device implanted within one's home surroundings and remotely operated. This was done, I remember the first time I ever saw some of this stuff done was in some Italian restaurants down here where they installed some of these BDI devices. And which caused people to drink a lot more alcohol. And this is, I remember the guy that invented them because you probably heard his name before. Implants are considered the most evasive form of harassment. Electronic implants consist of transmitters, ESF generators, microneuronic transceivers, tracking devices, and other micro-sized devices designed to cause harassment. The most common platform from an implant was designed by the government over 25 years ago and still in use today. It consists of a bodily fluid powered circuit capable of either transmitting voice, high voltage pulses, or emitting a small tracking beacon signal or other uses. Radiation is a very common form of harassment. The potential harasser can obtain an old X-ray gun from a surplus dealer or any other source with slight modifications and use it to bombard the target with deadly amounts of X-ray radiation. Such a device can be powered by batteries for extended periods of time. Overexposure to X radiation has been caused tumors, brain disorders, mental illness, headaches, cataracts, seizures, and blah, blah, blah. So many things. They also, like if you remember the guy that died, the spy that died a while back over in England, this was where they used a radioactive material such as thorium nitrate or plutonium oxide. That was a favorite way of killing people by the KGB. So that's some of electronic harassment. As you know out there, I learned about this stuff years ago, and we developed things like the nuclear receptor and all these other devices to get rid of that, but now it's coming to the time to really understand it. Now I want to go into my world where I live for a while, and that's a little bit of what happened with the CIA over time and some of these projects that went on. Okay. First of all, there was the first book, one of the first projects that we had that was approved by the director of CIA. It was in 1950. It was called Bluebird. Later on, it was renamed Artichoke. Okay, this program involved work on creation of amnesia, hypnotic couriers, and the Manchurian Candidate. Okay, now, what a Manchurian Candidate is, a person who can have multiple personalities, often created through mind control efforts, in which case certain personalities are used for covert intelligence operations, which are unknown to other personalities. Hypnosis, by the way, is involved in suppressing the personality, involved in clandestine operations so that the enemy cannot extract information from them. Often the people who have been severely abused will be susceptible and used this way. Abuse leads to varying degrees of fragmentation of the personality. And of course, you all know about the Kathy O'Brien situation and during the Bush administration, George H.W. Bush. Later on, with my time, well, this was before my time, these projects became MKUltra. In 1964, this project became MKSearch. That was after my time, which ran until 1972. And that was under the directorship of Richard Helms of the CIA. Now, the next thing that I found is that civilian involvement, you know, the CIA, I mean, people say, well, where did we do this? We take somebody into Langley, no, and they do an experiment. No, they don't. They use civilian contractors. Okay, this is where this starts. Okay. One of the first unethical experiments that started was called the Tuskegee Syphilis Study, in which 399 illiterate, rural, poor black men with syphilis were recruited in 1932 and studied to see the effect on them if not treating the syphilis. In other words, this is how Al Capone died, you know, if you remember. Penicillin was available for 30 years, which would have cured the syphilis. But it was not administered. And if you remember, Capone got serious on it because they wouldn't treat him when he was up in prison, up in Northern California. They wouldn't give him his treatment so that it got into his brain where it the brain destruction. Later on, they could treat the syphilis, but the brain destruction was already over with. Okay, they were given $25 for their participation. Okay, the Tuskegee syphilis study is relevant to mind control in several ways because it established a large network of private organizations and doctors and organizations willing to participate in fund grossly unethical medical experimentation all the way up to the 1970s. This went on. Now a lot of these doctors and institutions that were funded didn't know where the money came from. They just know it came from somewhere. And then, of course, from the 40s until the 70s, unethical radiation experiments were conducted on about 600 subjects in the United States. Many people were injected with plutonium, X-ray, and exposed to other forms of radiation without their informed consent. In one experiment, clouds of radioactive material were placed in the atmosphere and tracked as they moved downwards through populated areas. And I'm sure those of you that remember that when I had the head guy, I'm trying to remember his name, Sean, from... nuclear, because we sell these nuclear things that go in your pocket. Sean Connor, he talks about how they actually did the radioactive material through the wind and how to prevent yourself in case of a nuclear bomb. We already had a show on that. The Boston Project, in which subjects were injected with uranium, was run jointly, by the way, by the Massachusetts General Hospital and Health Physics Division, Oak Ridge National Laboratory. Dr. William Sweet was a neurosurgeon involved in the project, as well as his own brain electrode experience. And you watch, in his 1995 testimony to the advisory committee, Dr. Sweet claimed that all subjects gave informed consent. However, one of the subjects was injected with uranium when he arrived at the hospital unconscious and he died without even being identified. Now, Dr. Sweet is still in the news. You can Google him. This guy is still a big player. He's in reference, especially to the next guy that I'm going to bring up, to some Nazi people that came over. This started, by the way, with Joseph Mengele, these ideas. This came originally from the Third Reich, and when these paperclip boys came over here, these are exchange scientists with immunity, even though they committed these horrendous crimes. Mengele was made an example, but all the people that worked for him weren't. Some of them were just as smart as he was. Dr. Saul Krugman of New York University and his staff deliberately injected severely retarded children at Willowbrook State School with hepatitis virus in the 50s and 60s. And if you also remember from previous shows, I talked about in 1960, 1 million Americans were injected with cancer under a polio vaccine auspices in Mobile, Alabama, of which President Clinton apologized publicly for later on when this came out. Dr. Krugman, by the way, defended the project and said it was scientifically justified. Okay? And just, LSD experiments. Okay? LSD experiments include children as young as 5 years old, and brain electrodes were implanted in children as young as 11 years of age. In the CIA MK Ultra projects involved children, and believe me, they did, in the Kathy O'Brien story, which you can type that in on the internet and get that, something that has not been publicly documented before. We assume, you know, the Bluebird was the first book to mention these, the first study to mention these children. So anyway, now you're starting to understand. Now that we have this, we had sub projects. One group of sub, these sub projects are projects that are under a major project, and they're like divisions. In other words, this university over here gets this. This is the big experiment. You do this part, and over here, this school over here, or this hospital over there does that part. These are called sub-projects, okay? Another group of sub-projects involved on non-chemical mind control or psychological warfare include, where studies of social psychology, group psychology, perhaps psychology, hypnosis, sudden religious conversion, sleep, and sensory deprivation. This subgroup, by the way, made up 25% of the MK Ultra people that were involved. It involved mostly contractors, researchers of unwilling status. Most of them did not know the money came from the CIA. Okay, so now you're beginning to see where we're coming from with all of this. All right. Another project, CIA project, was called Project Often, O-F-T-E-N. It was designed to test the behavioral drug effects of drugs on animals and humans. The researchers looked for a compound that could simulate a heart attack or stroke in a targeted individual. Once again, the mentality of the CIA project set a precedent for what victims of e-harassment often experience. And the group, this was used as another killing machine. There was a group called Action that went out there that administered this. Subproject 94 at MKUltra involved placing electrodes in the brains of animals in order to control their behavior. By using a remote transmitter, doctors could control the animals' movements and use them for the delivery of bombs and biological and chemical weapons. A CIA memorandum for the record dated 18 October 1960 describes the research. The purpose of this subproject is to provide a continuation of investigations on the remote directional control of activities in selected species of animals. Miniaturized stimulating electrode implants in specific brain centers will be utilized. The ultimate objective of this research is to provide an understanding of the mechanisms involved in the directional control of animals and to provide practical systems for different applications, human applications. And this just goes on and on. Now, the next guy that's what I call a real guy to watch out there right now, his name is Dr. Jose Delgado, spelled D-E-L-G-A-D-O. He's currently a neurosurgeon and professor at Yale. He did extensive implant experiments using implants. He received military funding for brain electrode research on children and adults. Dr. Delgado did research on monkeys and cats, and in one paper he describes cats as mechanical toys. He was able to control the movement of this animal and human subject by pushing buttons on a remote transmitter box. And we'll talk about the deliverance of this in a few minutes. That's coming up. So this took place back in the 50s and 60s. Okay? Imagine what we can do now. You have no idea what we can do. Another experiment. In two adult female patients, stimulation of the same region in the occipital parietal lobe, followed by a discussion of marriage and expression of a wish to marry the therapist. Temporal lobe stimulation produced in another patient, often manifestations and declarations of pleasure accompanied by giggles, joking with the therapist. And this is all stuff that Dr. Delgado was into. Brain electrode research was also conducted by doctors at Harvard using electrodes developed by Dr. Delgado against a gun called the Stemocever. Okay, now the stemoceiver is something that's currently in use. Okay, it's the word stemoceiver, just like the opposite of one of our nuclear receptors, which stimulates the natural harmony and resonance within the human psyche. This is one that stimulates the resonance by somebody else's will. Dr. Sweet mentioned about the stemoceiver as being involved with radiation experience, was also involved in the Harvard experience. Another doctor, Frank Urban, later went into the UCLA Violence Center to study ways of controlling criminals with brain implants. Now, two Harvard doctors, Mark and Urban, describe in their book, Violence in the Brain, implanting brain electrodes in a large number of patients at Harvard hospitals. One of the patients in their book, shown in photographs, is smiling, angry, or pounding on the wall, depending on which button is pushed on a transmitter, sending signals to his brain electrodes. Clearly, the doctors had the ability to control human behavior with a brain implant many years ago. Now, Dr. Urban, who I just mentioned, was trained by Dr. Heath, chairman of the Department of Psychiatry and Neurology at Tulane University in New Orleans from 1949 to 1980. Dr. Heath received CIA and military money for hallucinogen and brain electrode implant research at Tulane University. Dr. Heath studied the effects of various drugs on people who had been implanted with electrodes, as well as observed various aspects of sexuality of implanted individuals. And then, of course, we remember John Lilly. Dr. Lilly conducted, remember John C. Lilly, we knew about him, conducted brain electrode experience on animals during the 50s. The nasal cavity and ear were common locations of the implant, of the stemoceiver, of the mind controller. So you start to understand here. And there was another program here called Sleeping Beauty, which is investigated by Schnabel and the Defense Department, of remote microwave mind-influencing techniques. Now, this is now remote microwave mind-influencing techniques is a step up beyond direct implanting. So now you start to understand a little bit about how this stuff works. So now we go up to the next step, and the next step is getting a remote delivery system into the human brain. This is where we go into the satellite side of it, all right? The satellite side. I hope everybody enjoys this stuff. Okay, now I'm going to reviewing something. We're going to look at a couple of inventions, okay? We're going to look at some declassified U.S. electronic harassment weapons. Realize the satellite systems are just delivery systems, okay? Inventor Elwood Norris and his small company, American Technology Corp. in Poway, California, which is down south of me, designed a market-ready device called the Acoustical Heterodyne. The device sends out two sound signals in acoustic above human hearing range, which then the impact of surface, which may be a living creature, then and only that produces sound at a frequency equal to the difference, heterodyne, of the two ultrasound frequencies. Now, with modern technology, with the higher technology that we have in the satellites right now, which I'm going to go into more in a minute, we scope out that we look at a person. We can monitor their heartbeat, their respiratory rate from a satellite, not a problem. We send two different radio frequency signals to two points in their brain, and then we put a very audio modulation. We make one signal strong, and then we make it weak, and the other signal, you know, signal A is strong and then made weak, and signal B becomes strong. And we do that in what's called an acoustical rate, and therefore now we can implant voices in people's heads. David Koresh, for example, could have been a target for this. It could have been a local ground operating unit. It could have been a higher-up unit. We don't know. I don't know that. People that channel. Channelers are, and we'll get into Project Moonbeam here in a few minutes. Blue Light, rather, which is a NASA project. Channelers and Aquarian people are big targets for this stuff. They love playing with them. People say, well, I'm channeling something. Well, there's a good chance they are. There's a good chance they actually have one of these beams on them, and they think that they're coming to a realization of something. And it's too often not in modern times that this realization and this wonderful force from God is nothing more than programming. And this programming, which became Operation Bluebeam, was laid out by the Greys back in the 60s and 50s as a possible way through the implants and not the implants. They don't even need the implants now. Originally, they were using them. Now they aren't even as necessary. Back in 1984, Stephen Whitney in Austin, Texas, when he shot 14 people, he had two implants. They were found. But did you start to understand now how this stuff works? Police helicopters, of course, we know about their electromagnetic gun that they're using to deploy electromagnetic pulses to stop these more modern cars that have computers. Now, the old internal combustion engines, okay? Another experiment called LifeGuard can pick up the strongest part of the field in the heart. And through now, this is how we start to hook up to the people. The pumping of the human heart is controlled by electrical signals, which doctors measure in electrocardiograms. The heart's activity generates an irregular, ultra-low frequency electric field that extends in a circle around the body. The field is faint, but it can pass through any physical barrier. The LifeGuard, that's the name of this thing, can pick up the strongest part of the field, the heart, through barriers including concrete walls, heavy foliage, and rocks. Company officials say the LifeGuard can detect a person in 5 seconds and can pinpoint his or her location with a high degree of accuracy. This is a device that's out there now. It's called the Life Assessment Detector System. All right? So you begin to see, we're not just talking, you know, I don't like to talk about, you know, I heard this or I did that. What I try to do here and what I'm trying to do tonight is to give you absolutely facts of where you can go. Okay? And I'm sure when you get, there's also these accumulation projects. This is where we start getting a larger database to find out. This is how they choose their target, okay? Okay. Project Echelon. Some of you probably already know what that is. Echelon is listening to what you were saying. Keep in mind, it's not just Echelon listening in. Anything we have, any device that we have that has a microphone that can be turned on into a listening device, we can even be listened to via our landline telephones when they are on the hook. Cell phones, laptops, PDA devices can be listened on remotely. Remember the mobster who has taken down partially because the remotely planted software in his cell phone so they can listen to the conversations in the room. Even when the cell phone is turned off, as long as the microphone or its communication device, then watch your back. In other words, a microphone is a little piece of carbon that moves inside of a coil and it produces an electromagnetic audio pulse. The Echelon surveillance system is fairly simple. It's set up, it positions and intercepts stations all over the world to capture all satellite, microwave, cellular, fiber optic communications traffic, and then processed it through a massive computer capabilities at NSA, including advanced voice recognition and optical character recognition programs. And they look for code words and phrases, you know, and if there's too many code words or places, then flags come up, and then you become a target, okay? Promise. Something that can track you so well when you're sleeping, knows when you're awake, probably knows if you have been good or bad, you know. That's the promise system. Promise is a software system that can think and understand every single language in the world and take it apart in seconds. So now we begin to understand the capability. This is not something we're working on. This is technology where it is today, and it's growing and getting better by the minute. Just by the minute. Now we'll start in a minute to look at delivery systems. I have one other thing I want to share with you. Okay? A little quick thing here I want to share. As we know, covert censorship, corrupt government agencies and their criminal contacts can covertly attack honest citizens, even those who criticize their criminal operations or conduct. They can abuse these people using high-tech satellite and surveillance equipment as well as satellite-based psychotronic and directed energy weapons. The complicit mainstream media cooperates fully, because guess what? They're owned, right? Because of legal ramifications into the fact that, as of the bulk of the entertainment industry, it is criminally owned and managed, as we know. The entertainment industry is criminally owned. The result of this is that many innocent people who attempt to highlight important issues are silenced, isolated, discredited, and are institutionalized. Now, this hasn't, as we go into creeping fascism, we haven't got quite to that point yet, but we're getting there. A national security cover allows those responsible to pretend their innocent targets are guilty of something, or under suspicion of potentially dangerous or anything that they can tell themselves to somehow justify the inhuman treatment they met out to their enemies. It's secret. Their secret, usually remote satellite-based technology, can track targets by any means, including by their brain, unique electronic resonance frequencies. It can monitor audio visibility, inflict pain, disease, create exchange moods and reactions, deliver computer-generated and relayed voices to the brain, read minds, and cause other seemingly explicable happenings of apparent psychic, paranormal, or extraterrestrial nature. Thin line between what they put in your brain and what's really happening. These secret weapons can cause targets to suicide, commit murders, be driven to madness, and on and on. Everything is generally not a good move because of ignorance and fear, and complicity means that little or no help is forthcoming from these people. So in other words, you ask for help, you're not going to get it. Public figures are fed the results of a 24/7 surveillance operation carried out on targets. Now, we talked about how through Echelon they find their targets. The gathering of their words, thoughts, and actions. Writers working for criminals and agencies sow the results into public speeches, scripts, etc., as they're gleaned into the surveillance. Celebrities may be told lies about the target or who or what the target is, but basically they'll do it regardless from money and opportunity. People are screened by the CIA, etc., as they enter public life to ensure they'll remain silent, cooperative, and pliable. Most can be easily blackmailed and threatened by agencies' criminals who are simply puppets dangling from the Godfather's strings with Big Brother overseeing their operations and intervening when necessary. All involved have sold out and sold their souls. Their conduct is illegal, indefensible, excusable, inhuman, and they belong in prison for their part in it. Even those merely acquiescing are accessories of competence because they're providing a legitimate cover for these criminal practices. Police, like other professionals, are not officially told about this, but they do through some kind of learning due through their careers. They are not told because they themselves can be monitored, harassed by wealthy criminals using relevant technology, and if they get too close to their operations, as we see on the movies and all that they do, a one-time acting NSW Commissioner Ben Lawson conferred to us personally, knowledge of this would cause an outcry and a mass exodus from the police force. So we don't want that. But police ignorance prevents honest law enforcers from believing helping victims, thus discrediting them. Now, here's a psychiatrist's role, okay? Psychiatric diagnostic manuals are in part written and set up by corrupt government agency personnel, especially in the U.S., as to provide an easy means of discrediting people who complain about covert harassment. Believe me, I've seen this with so many people because they come to me all the time with this covert harassment. Psych students are basically taught that if you can't see it or it leaves no evidence, it doesn't exist. Didn't happen, and the complaint must be delusional. Their position, therefore, protects government agencies and clever criminals in allowing the following injustices. One, all complaints about covert harassment can be dismissed as paranoia. All complaints about voice-to-brain technology can be dismissed as schizophrenia. All complaints about media feedback of surveillance can be dismissed as delusional. All complaints about oppression, torture, and abduction can be dismissed as fantasy. So now you begin to see how the system works, bigger and better. It all is all very, very highly organized from much higher levels. When you get up into the people that pull the strings, this is how they work. This is the way they break things down, you know. Common misconceptions, national security laws, they protect us. The truth is, they're mainly a cover for crimes of the government, military, corporate, and conglomerate. Spies, they help and protect us. They're mostly thugs working for the oppressors. Conspiracy theories, they're paranoid beliefs. The world is run and for and four conspirators, the Mafia, the Illuminati, the Cosa Nostra, the CIA, DI, MI6, the Mossad, etc., they control the media and hence our perception and knowledge of their role. Public figures, they're worthy of our respect and trust. Many work with or for or with criminals in the drug trade, war promotion, ideas, piracy, most are phonies. Democracy, we choose our representatives and they work for us. All politicians are vetted by the CIA, etc., at entry pre-election. And if the vetting is proper, they get a good reading. Otherwise, if they can be possibly set up for blackmail and scandals and mind control, that's just exactly what they want. War, famine, poverty, disease, and illicit drugs, all are avoidable, but all could be greatly reduced if not eliminated, but it's not profitable to get rid of war, famine, and poverty, diseases. Okay? So now you're starting to understand how this goes. The drug side of it. Okay, now let's look at the drug side of it. How does Big Pharma come in? Okay? Big Pharma. This is, we're talking about the NASA Bluebeam Project. Here's a quote from a psychologist, James V. McConnell, published in 1970, issue of Psychology Today. He said, "The day has come when we combine our sensory, when we can combine our sensory deprivation with drugs, hypnosis, and astute manipulation of reward and punishment to gain against absolute control over individual behavior. It should then be possible to achieve a very rapid and highly effective type of positive brainwashing that would allow us to make dramatic change in a person's behavior and personality." Okay? That's exactly what happened to Stephen Kasmerzak the other day. L'Oreal Electrical Optical Systems. That's L'Oreal Electrical Optical Systems in Pasadena, a major defense contractor, has previously been conducted research on directed energy weapons for the U.S. Air Force. Okay? Another, what kind of weapons? Okay, a telepathic electronic two-way communication from space goes exactly with what kind of technology? And here is a microwave beam generated by a device modulated to audio frequencies that can broadcast a voice directly into the brain. In this book, Body Electric, Nobel Peace Prize winner Robert Baker describes a series of experiments conducted in the early 1960s by the U.S. Army, where this phenomenon at Walter Reed Hospital research led by Dr. Jules C.E. Sharp, who personally underwent tests in which he proved he could hear and understand spoken words delivered to him in an echo-free isolation chamber via a microwave audiogram in the analog work sound vibration beamed in his brain. Such a device has an obvious application in covert operations designed to drive a target crazy with voices and deliver undetectable instruction to programmed assassins. And this is what they're starting to do with these kids, that they're making them programmed assassins. And as you know, as we spoke about this before, when these things are inaugurated, there's so many new tools of inauguration to make all this possible, then, of course, they legislate away our constitutional freedoms, take away our right to bear arms, and make freedom of health choices. Okay? So this is the beginning of it. Now, let's jump directly over to Paxil. As you know, first of all, I'm going to Paxil is Paxiline hydrochloride is orally administered. It is a hydrochloride salt of phenylpapyridine compound identified chemically as trans-4-R-fluorophenyl methyl-dioxyphenyl methylpapyridine hydrochloride, and there's the formula. I have it right in front of me. Now let's go look over here at, once again, we've done this before. Let's look at it again. Let's look at papyridine. Papyridine is listed in Table 2 precursor under the United Nations Convention Against Illicit Drugs and Narcotic Drugs and Psychotropic Substances due to its known peaking in the 1970s. In clandestine manufacture, PCP is known as angel dust. Papyridine is commonly used in chemical degradation reactions such as DNA sequencing methods invented by Walter Gilbert in 1977 for cleavage of particular modified nucleotides. Papyridine is commonly used as a base for the deprotection of FMO amino acids in a solid phase peptide synthesis. I'm going to read this one part. It is listed as a Table 2 precursor under the United Nations Convention Against Illicit Traffic in Narcotic Drugs, and Psychotropic Substance due to its horrible peaking in 1970s in the clandestine manufacture of PCP, known as angel dust. It's the key ingredient in Paxil, and it's pretty much found in all of the other stuff that we see. Now let's look at the satellite. Let's take a look at a particular satellite and a couple of particular satellites. Okay? These come under what we call the MISTI series, MISTI satellites. All right? Now, if you remember, we had a satellite. We had an assassination, an Illinois school. We basically assassinated and then a self-destruction. We had all that happen a week in the last 10 days. All this happened. What spaceship was up there? The Atlantis. The Atlantis was up there. Let's talk about the karma of the Atlantis. Okay? The Atlantis had a previous mission. Back in February 28, 1990, at 2:50 in the morning, okay, Eastern Standard Time. It was in space for 4 days, 10 hours, 18 minutes, and 22 seconds. Its orbit altitude was 132 nautical miles, and distance traveled was about 1,920,000 miles. The space shuttle Atlantis, on that day, the STS-36, mission, took a MISTI reconnaissance satellite up. It was the sixth flight for Atlantis, the fourth night launch of the program, and the second night launch since shuttle flights resumed in 1988. Think about that. There's your number six coming up. This was the sixth mission of Atlantis. Atlantis carried what is called a KH-11-10 Signals Intelligence Payload. That's a KH-11-10 Signal Intelligence Payload, Atlantis. First of all, on February 28, 1990, the launch was set for February 22nd, postponed to February 23rd, 24th, 25th, due to illness of a crew member and weather conditions. This was the first time since the Apollo 13 in 1970 that a manned space mission was affected by the illness of a crew member. More karma, illness, and the shooting, okay, of Stephen. We just talked about him, Kaznik. All right. External tank was loaded for launch attempts, blah, blah, blah. Launch attempt. February 28 was set for a classified window lying within the launch period extending from 12 midnight to 4 a.m. Eastern. Launch weight classified. Now, the big brouhaha here is that this was definitely a black ops satellite, mind control, classified, very careful to get this puppy up. They did not want this thing to go wrong. Now, here's the rest of it. The launch trajectory was unique to this flight and allowed the mission to reach an orbital inclination of 62 degrees. The deployment orbit of its payload, while the normal maximum inclination of a shuttle flight is 57 degrees. That's a lot steeper altitude of climb. This so-called dogleg trajectory saw Atlantis fly downrange on a normal launch azimuth and then maneuver to a higher launch azimuth once over water. They did not want to change the azimuth on this spacecraft over land, hence it go down, something happen, and this satellite be discovered. This was highly classified, just like the one that they shot down the other day. Although the maneuver resulted in a reduction of vehicle performance, it was the only way to reach the required deployment orbit from Kennedy Space Center. Originally, the flight had been slated to launch from Vandenberg. And I also might tell you, but a lot of times these Vandenberg launches are decoys. We didn't even have time tonight because we're running out of time, but we didn't even have time tonight to go into decoy launching. Decoy launching is where people are starting to track these satellites to see what they are with some pretty sophisticated equipment, and then they want to go up and stealth them later on in orbit. Okay? Flight rules that prohibit overflight of land were suspended. Okay? Flight rules that prohibit overflight of land were suspended. With the trajectory taking the vehicle over or near Cape Hatteras, Cape Cod, and parts of Canada. The payload was considered to be of importance to national security, hence the suspension of normal flight rules. Now, what did we say back here about national security? Just another cover-up for criminal activity? I think that's what we just said earlier. That's part of fascism. Okay? So that gives you a little bit of an idea about that bird that went up. Now, there's another thing that's happening. Some U.S. senators in the blew the whistle. There's a little whistleblowing going on in Congress right now about what's going on with the mystery spy satellite program. Well, who are we spying on? We're spying on ourselves. Come on. We could care less about what else is going on. We want to make sure it's what we're doing. They're spying on other people in the world. They're tracking people over the world. But there's a lot of spy and other fascism in this country. We're going to pick out targets in this country. And we're not going to, we're going to watch targets in other countries, but we're going to pick them out in this country. And that's why these lawmakers are getting. One lawmaker, J.D. Rockefeller, Democrat in West Virginia, the vice chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, openly criticized the program on the floor of the U.S. Senate. He said the program is totally unjustified and very wasteful and dangerous to national security. Yeah, it's dangerous to national security because national security is a cover-up of criminal activity. So it's dangerous to the cover-up of criminal activity. And he's a good senator, by the way, just because his name is, all the Rockefellers aren't bad, all right? Just don't go by the name. Adding that he had voted to terminate the program for 2 years with no success. There is now a delicate dance underway between the issues of national security and open public scrutiny about taxpayer dollars being spent wisely and squandered. Yeah, that's true, but taxpayer dollars don't spend anything on national security. That comes from someplace completely different. All we do is pay the interest on the national debt. That's all taxpayer money does. I'm sure everybody knows that. It's just the interest payments. That's all we do. Meanwhile, the swirl of secrecy seems to be resolving into a top-secret, stealthy project codenamed MISTI. And, of course, we talked about MISTI. And Blue Light, we'll have a talk about it for a couple more minutes here, and then we're going to have to go. Blue Light is an orchestration of spiritual activities, extraterrestrial coming to Earth, and all of this, through different minds, producing different forms of psychosis. Blue Light allows a channeler to channel exactly what's being beamed into him. You have to be somebody like Kevin Ryerson to be, considered, it was Shirley MacLaine's channel, somebody powerful, somebody that's really famous, and start channeling this stuff. And they'll program you up, and believe me, the New Age is the big, and I can't do much more tonight because we're running out of time, but the New Age is exactly where the target goes for these Blue Light projects. And these projects, and I named a bunch of them tonight, are all logistically happening or have happened and are real, and it's much more sophisticated even than I have presented tonight. And I'm not even finished with my studying and moving around in the world that I live in, and in the spy business and all the other places where I've been. And by the way, watch those NSA updates. I got some new ones to come up. They're throwing me stuff from the Middle East as fast as I can get it up, and that's real stuff. I just can't get it all up and do all this at once, so I apologize for not getting up the latest NSA updates, which, once again, they're here. They were gone for a long time, and now they're back, and I sure take advantage of them, and I thank the people involved that send those to us, because they're just they're declassified. We get them before CNN. We get them a week before CNN or anybody else does. We've got an amazing seminar coming up here in Laguna Beach. I'm going to have some very powerful people here. I'm trying to get Stephen Greer even to come to this one and teach. A lot of really cool people are supposedly going to be coming. So hopefully we'll have all this going on. We're going to be in New York at the end of next month, and we're going to be up in San Francisco doing some stuff. We're going to have a big seminar down here in June. I'm going to have some really cool people coming to that. You can't miss that one. We've got a lot of stuff coming up. This is all out of my new book, what I read tonight, bits and pieces of it. Next week we're going to have Dr. Colin Ross on. He's amazing. This show was just to get you ready for him. Wait till he comes on. You think I'm heavy? This guy is in there right now doing this stuff. So with that, I want to thank my listeners out there. And this show will be rebroadcasted tomorrow night at 9 o'clock on Station 3, I believe, or 2 or whatever. Tell your friends about it. I think it was a good show. I'm always bragging on myself because I'm stupid, but that's the way it goes. I hope I shared something with you. I hope you got something out of it. all of the Pyridine products that we make that we didn't even talk about, the defense against. We have defense mechanisms for everything we talked about. Contact the people at our company. We'll tell you what does what and how it works. The flamethrower is a device that we don't talk about much, which is tremendously powerful. The Star Orb, you guys know about. The receptors, projectors, all block this stuff. But first of all, realize what's going on, then see if we make any sense to you. With that, I'll say goodnight to my audience, and we'll talk next Friday live.